It's hard for me to have conversations with people, you know, in general, because I have to pretend like I don't know what I know.
Right.
But every once in a while, like somebody will ask me if I have a sibling, and I tell them my sibling's very sick. And I usually start out by saying they're addicted to OnlyFans porn. And then I'll say, but they're addicted to dressing up like a 14-year-old girl on OnlyFans. And then they'll be like, oh. And then I'll say they don't work, and they siphon my mother, who's petrified to have him knock on her door. Then people get quiet.
Welcome to the Whose Body Is It podcast. I'm your host, Isabella Malbin. For those who don't know me, I'm a life coach, a hypnotist, a former birth worker, and a former liberal feminist turned radical truth teller. On this podcast, you'll learn about the ideologies, industries, and technologies attempting to control our minds and bodies, such as transgender ideology, pornography, prostitution, and the many tentacles of the medical industrial complex. Together, we'll untangle patriarchal lies as you listen to jaw-dropping interviews with women from around the world. Warning! While listening to this podcast, you might find yourself triggered or perhaps notice where you've been biting your tongue on the issues that matter most to you. In the masterclasses available on my site, as well as my one-on-one coaching and hypnosis, you will learn to stop getting triggered by every freaking thing, learn to cultivate resilience, gain knowledge, and if we're working together one-on-one, stop unwanted behaviors and increase your self-confidence. You can book your first session and check out the masterclasses in the library at whosebodyisit.com. And I just want to say that it's because of your endless support that I'm able to interview amazing women, get their stories out, and produce regular content for you. So with that being said, please like, comment, and subscribe to my channel on YouTube. And if you're just listening in, leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, and consider making a financial contribution via the link in my show notes. You can also support the podcast by getting your activist stickers. So my pro-woman stickers have the power to intercept transhumanist programming. So take a photo of your stickers out in the wild and tag me on Instagram at Whose Body Is It. Without further ado, let's get into this week's story. Why now? Like, why do you want to share your particular vantage point in this whole trans madness? Why now, before we even get into the particulars of your story?
That is a great question. And also thank you for having me to share this story. I think what made me want to share now is that I noticed there was a gap in the storytelling around this topic, and that nobody really was talking about what it does to families when a person believes they're the opposite sex, and how it can cause this deeply entrenched drama that actually can affect people's health, their mental health, their financial health, and what a toxic experience it can be that divides and tears families down, and they have nowhere to go. I think that was what was fascinating, is there was nowhere for my mother to get any help. There was no groups for her to turn to of other mothers. There was nobody for her to talk to about where is my son that she raised, and she only has two children, me and my brother. He's actually my half brother. And so it was very difficult for her. I noticed just her suffering. And my stepfather became catatonic because he had nobody to talk to in the male world about this. Mm. He felt a deep sense of shame, and he felt like it was his fault in some ways. And that was all just so wrong, in my opinion. And so my hope is that sharing this story is that people know that there are other families out there suffering.
So tell us a little bit about the, what is the suffering that you're alluding to here?
Well, my brother became autogonophilic when he was in his early 30s. He was married for 12 years about with the same woman, and it was quite sudden. And my family didn't actually at first believe that it was real. And I think as time has gone on, it's become very real, and that he refuses to work and he only will do OnlyFans. I believe it's more autogonophilic in that he doesn't really make a lot of money from it. And so we noticed that his bank statements were still coming to my mother's home, and we noticed his rent hadn't been paid. And then he started haunting her for money, screaming at her that she owes him because he deserves this money, even though they put him through college and paid for his wedding. And he'd only gotten married 2 years prior to this revelation. So it was quite bizarre to us. He left his wife and moved in with a post-op trans woman and really immediately started doing porn. I think that, you know, the financial abuse that now he's putting upon my family has stretched them. My parents both work really hard. They're young, still in their early 60s, and they still work. My mother's an RN, and my stepfather works in nuclear medicine, and they both are, you know, work really hard in big city hospitals. And so they're having to dip into their pensions to pay his rent. He has collectors showing up like letters at their house for court summons. And he is consistently calling them and screaming at them, ranting, because he's on a lot of different drugs that he gets online over Zoom with Planned Parenthood. And nobody's ever titered him or checked his levels. He's gained 80 pounds in a very short period of time, and his personality has become even more erratic and erratic as time has gone on. And it's really scary for us.
So your parents are at the point where they're not like cutting him off or giving ultimatums. They're kind of enabling this like narcissistic, autogynephilic rage and entitlement, and now like pharmaceutical drug dependence is what I'm hearing.
Yeah. And I think with my parents, like, it's been a conversation I've had with them. My stepfather, his real father would prefer not to give him a nickel, but my mother is petrified that he'll become homeless and forced to live in their house. And she doesn't want that. And so it's really her way of keeping him out of her home. To be honest, it's a sad form of, I don't even know if it's purely enabling or her fear that he'll try to move in because he's threatened that many times. And so she's worried that if he gets evicted, he'll never be able to find another place to live because that goes on your record. And bouncing checks and having bad credit, she's like, he'll end up at my door and I cannot have him live with me. You know, he's 35 years old now. He should be supporting himself. And he used to, but now he won't.
So this is like a very like classic pipeline that, you know, for you know, if this is your first Whose Body Is It episode, then this might not be a very obvious pipeline. But if you've researched autogynephilia and OnlyFans and porn, like in some of the previous episodes, like especially with Genevieve Gluck and Alex Aaron, you know, there's a very predictable sequence of events, which is like porn fueled culture, saturation of, you know, porn conception leading to the hypnosissy porn, like a fixation on getting sissified, which just means like getting degraded and performing degradation or performing womanhood, yep. Which in the sissy porn is being, you know, denigrated and just like treated like shit and fucked and all the things.
Yeah.
And then the compulsive use, like a gamble, like almost like a gambling addiction to the hormones, to the costume, to the makeup.
A lot of his bankruptcy problems are from laser treatments. As Italians, we're quite hairy. And he spent probably like $14,000 on laser treatments. So yeah, you're right about that.
Wow, laser. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. So, okay. So you've just kind of laid out like the, what sounds like, you know, your mother's attempt at self-preservation so that she doesn't, like, her life doesn't become worse. Like, so this is like kind of a mitigation of the situation. It sounds like, I can't imagine how difficult that would be as a parent. And then as you spoke to, like, yeah, from a male perspective, like the male parent or step parent, like the shame involved and not being able to talk or being accused of being transphobic or homophobic or the, you know, all the things that, that we know, like, parents get gaslighted with. But can you speak to your experience as the sister, as the actual only daughter of the family? Maybe let's backtrack, because as this, like, were you ever like a good liberal who like tried to liberate the trans people and like was that a part of your trajectory?
It's so fascinating. So when my brother and I are 9 years apart, so we have quite a big age difference. I moved away when he was about 12. And I can tell you firsthand that I raised him in a lot of ways because I was like a second mom. My mom, as I mentioned, worked 12-hour shifts. And so I took care of him a lot, and I never would have suspected any of this. Him and I weren't especially close because of our age difference, but I felt like more of a mother. He would always call me when he got into trouble. His first few years of college, he took some drugs and threw up and got scared. First person he called was me, broke his arm. He would call me, what do I do? So I loved him dearly. And I'll be honest, as an only child, I was obsessed with having a sibling. So I was really excited to have him. When I moved away for college, I noticed that when he was around the age of 20, he started ignoring me and becoming very strange towards me, especially when I got pregnant when I was 31. He really avoided me at all costs. He would refuse to meet my baby, hold my baby. He never acknowledged she existed. He never got her one birthday gift in her whole life. She's 10 now. And I eventually, being a feisty Sicilian, I said, you know what? Fuck this. And I just told my parents I wanted nothing to do with him. And he triangulated me. He made up stories that I had threatened his wife, who I'd only met, I think, twice at that point. I didn't even have her phone number. I've never threatened anybody. And so I was like, they believed him. Oddly enough, it created a huge gap in my relationship with my family for about 12 years, where I felt like they believed all of his bullshit, but I could never figure out why he was doing it. I could never figure out why he was triangulating my step-parent and my mother against me. And so I stayed here far away from them and raised my child alone and would come home to see my parents, but never him. And then one day he called me, and this was at a point where he had not called me in about 12 years. And it was during COVID, and it was around my birthday. And so I thought he was calling for that. And he actually had no idea it was my birthday. And he said, I wanted you to be the first to know that I'm actually a lesbian. And that was the first thing he said. And I thought, I thought this was a joke. I was like, why are you fucking with me? Like, I haven't spoken to you in so long. And, you know, and your comment about being a good liberal, we do have a lot of gay family members in my stepfather's family, in fact, a lot, an unnatural amount. And so I've grown up with a gay community around me, and I've always been very supportive of their struggle. And I remember the days when they couldn't go see their partner in the hospital and just not having equal rights. And I was passionate about that, making sure that people had the same access to their partner or to buy housing or being treated fairly. And so I was very sympathetic at first, to be honest with you. He told me he was going to become a trans activist and that he had been struggling with this for a while and that he was leaving his wife for another woman who was trans. And that,
that is trans, do you mean a man or a woman?
It was a man, and they are fully operated from Thailand. They got it in Thailand. So they had their penis removed and everything. Yeah. At a very young age, from what I understand, I think that person was 18.
Oh my gosh.
So yeah, they saved their nickels and dimes. Yeah.
Okay, so he's like, I'm leaving my wife. I have a new partner. It's a man who had his penis removed when he was 18, but we are actually lesbian. I just want you to know that.
Yeah, and I'll be honest, I had no effing idea why you would tell me first. And I said that to him. I said, you know, Alex, I don't know what your new name is, but I don't forgive you for how you've treated me and my daughter. And I kind of was harping on that because I was very like, why are you putting all your problems on me when we have a problem? And I don't understand why. And he goes, well, the real reason is that I was so jealous of you. You were a tomboy and you never wanted to get your hair and nails done with mom. And I did. And I hated that you always like were enjoying being a woman without doing those things. And I wanted to do those things. And I hope that why he kept saying it, I hope me and mom can get our nails done together. That's what I really love, because you never did that. And you were always so strong and educated. And, you know, I wanted to be like that. And so that's what I'm going to do with my life now, is I want to be like you. I want to, you know, be you. And he has since changed his name to my daughter's name, which was horrifying for me and scary.
That is so scary.
At the time when he came out to me, he didn't have a name yet. He wasn't transitioned. He was deciding what he wanted to do. So he sounded in pain and hurt. And I, having that mother gene and that mother relationship with him, I did feel that like pain. And I was like, I will help you come out to the family. I'll organize a Zoom because I'm far away and we're all around the United States. And he said, I'm going to just show up at my parents' house dressed up. And I said, you will not do that. And he said, I will do that. And I called them immediately to warn them. And of course, because of the triangulation, they didn't believe me right away until I started sobbing, which isn't really my nature, but it was so overwhelming for me that I did. And they believed me. And they called him and they were devastated. Like, I've never heard my parents, I've never heard my stepfather wail, but he wailed like a wounded animal. And my mother wailed. And I, at the time, tried to convince them that this wasn't changeable, that they kept kind of having this, I call it the boomer hope, that he was just going through a phase. And I said, I don't think so. And I helped organize a Zoom with our very small family of cousins, and they were all, you know, kind to him and welcoming. And we're like, of course, we're supportive. We love you. And then some time passed and I noticed he wasn't on Instagram or social as much, but then something quite clever happened. You know how Instagram will say, do you know this person? Because they're in your phone contacts. And I started getting served pages that he had developed that were all porn of men with breasts jerking off on camera. And then it also suggested the same on Twitter, and his Twitter was just him reposting she-males jerking off, talking about their girl cum. I hope I'm not being too vile. I apologize, but this is literally what I was seeing, was him dressed up like a child most of the time, like pigtails, you know, children's kind of like tube toppy type things. And that's when it hit me that I needed to do more research, because that's my background. I'm truly have 3 degrees in research. And so I said, I need to understand this. And I found Dr. Deborah So. Her book had just come out around that time. So I dove into every podcast. I read Dr. Ann Lawrence. I read Bailey. I read Blanchard. It was so hard to buy the books. They were hundreds of dollars on Amazon. And I saw the death threats that J.K. Rowling was getting. And I started to really educate myself on autogonophilia. And I realized how many people didn't know about it and how I didn't know about it. And that's when I realized that's what he was. Truly. And I told my mother. It took me months to tell her. And she was devastated. And she had to go to therapy for that. And it was hard for her to find a therapist that was not woke. She ended up finding one at Harvard, thank God.
Wow, that's very impressive at Harvard. She was able to.
Yeah. A very Dr. Deborah So type of physician. Yeah, that really did not believe and refused those clients in her office.
Wow.
So I was very lucky that she found her, but my mom's quite squirrely when she puts her mind to it.
Wow. I mean, yeah, so many elements of what you just said. And like, it is so, I think it really is important. I mean, this is a difficult conversation. Obviously, like, this is your life. This is what you've been through. It is disgusting, because that is just the reality of this fetish and of this like severe personality disorder. And so it's both, you know, it's both, I think, you know, important that we are explicit at times to convey the reality of what's going on, because in the media and in people's like little, you know, kind of tunnels of what they're exposed to, it's most people who haven't gone down these rabbit holes are not considering the like material consequence. And like, I mean, just the fact that he chose your daughter's name is the one of the most, I mean, if that doesn't demonstrate like the complete, you know, as Jennifer Billick says, like colonizing our biology.
Oh, so well said.
Right. And like beyond an adult woman, he has to violate that boundary. Like how many times? Like, I mean, it's just, and yeah. And actually Caitlyn Jenner did this, who now he's called Caitlyn Jenner, Bruce Jenner.
Right.
He chose the name of his son's wife at the time, or I don't know if they were married, but yeah, Caitlyn.
I had no idea. Wow.
Yeah. Was the, he has, you know, he has Brody and I forgot the other guy's name.
They don't talk to him from what I understand. They're horrified.
They do not. They absolutely do not. And there's one element in like one of their spinoff, kind of a spinoff of Kardashian shows. Maybe it was in the Kardashians where the now ex-girlfriend of Brody relays the fact of her like father-in-law
fetishized her.
Fetishizing her and choosing her. Asking to be called by her name. I mean, it's just,
it's horrible. It's so frightening to me that it's, I tell people sometimes, like, it's hard for me to have conversations with people, you know, in general, because I have to pretend like I'm not, I don't know what I know.
Right.
But every once in a while, like somebody asks me if I have a sibling and I tell them my sibling's very sick. And I usually start out by saying they're addicted to OnlyFans porn. And then I'll say, but they're addicted to dressing up like a 14-year-old girl on OnlyFans. And then they'll be like, oh. And then I'll say they don't work. And they siphon my mother, who's petrified to have him knock on her door. And I think then people get quiet and they don't. I think that's the thing that hurts the most. People don't even want to fucking hear it. They don't even fucking care. And I think it's killing my parents. Like, I actually think it's stealing their life force from them. And I don't have any other family, so other than my daughter. And so I feel very alone in it. And that's why when I discovered your podcast and all the other researchers, I felt a little less alone, even though, you know, it's a voice or a book. It's like still felt really validating that I wasn't crazy or a bigot. And I believe in science. And I don't believe in what's happening right now. I'm worried that there's something wrong. Like, I grew up in the 80s and 90s, and I didn't see this. I saw lots of different movements. I think we can all attest to the emo and goth and satanic smoking weed and all the really random MDMA things that came about, LSD. Never, ever, ever, ever have I seen anybody question their identity. But I see autism and ADHD and this, and I wonder, is there something in the food? is there something in the water? Because there's something not right happening, and it's way too prevalent. It's scary. I don't even know if it's a social contagion. Is it possibly an environmental contagion? Because I didn't grow up with kids flapping their arms in my classroom either. And right. My daughter has a lot of that too. And I'm like wondering what's wrong with the biome.
Yeah.
That's a whole different topic, but I apologize. I just
said no, it's, this is what we, this is what, you know, that I invite, you know, people on to this podcast to explore those very, you know, those very questions. And I think each person that I've spoken to has a different take, you know, like I've explored the kind of the vaccine connection, I've explored
yeah.
the porn connection, the social contagion aspect.
I've been looking into yeah. glyphosate and Roundup, glyphosate. RFK. I'm going to be a big RFK fan, and I didn't know about that. That was one of the bits of research I found when I was trying to understand what is going on. And I'll be honest, my mother is really hates these terms. She, as somebody who is in a science world, she kind of will go, well, is it, you're making it me feel like it's my fault. Is it mm-hmm. something I ate? Is it something I did? And so she kind of doesn't want to hear it. But that, I think, too, is part of the boomer, you know, ethos a bit, is like ignoring some of the facts sometimes. I did try to get her to read Dr. Deborah So's book, and she did read some of it. But it is hard for her because I think sometimes if we do find out what happened, then all these mothers will feel so guilty. And that's sad. So I didn't want to do that to her. I don't harp on it anymore. But labels don't make her feel any better, unfortunately.
Like understanding that there's a method or like a predictable sequence of events with his, with the, like how his life is unfolding or has unfolded. I think like, yeah, I could see how theoretically that might help things make more sense to know that it, you know, it's happening elsewhere, you know, like men are doing these things in other circumstances. I imagine as a mother, there would still be an element of internalizing like that was my fault. And then, I can't imagine how difficult it would be to have to protect yourself from your own son, which is sounds like what is happening. I worked with a number of mothers who have been through this with their sons are not as old as your brother, but there is a turning point like where they become 18, where it's just really completely out of their hands.
Gloves are off, right? Yeah.
And discovering the porn, the online porn. I mean, it is a really, sadly, a kind of a, yeah, it is a pipeline. It doesn't mean, you know, there isn't hope for someone who might choose to intercept this, like trance, mm-hmm. pun intended, trance. But yeah, the loneliness that you're speaking to, given like the political climate, I mean, have you had experience of being able to like speak really honestly and openly about this and be received by friends or other family members?
I mean, thankfully, like the people, funny enough, a lot of my lesbian, real lesbian friends, they're the ones who hate it the most. Funny enough, they're the ones who really are the most ramped up about it. I have a few girlfriends that I grew up with that have been gay, you know, out for a long, long time now. And they're horrified by this. And they honestly laughed when I say my brother's a lesbian. And they're like, aren't all guys lesbians? I think they'll make that joke. And, you know, but also too, is that I think once again, there's a bit of that struggle where they're like, you know, they remember being hated and disgusted by society. And so I have to be a little careful, like not to come off that I'm anti gay or any of that too. So it's like there's a delicateness that I approach those conversations with, because like times, you know, in the 90s when we were growing up, like there were not as many gay rights. And so I think there's some gay people that are very careful to balance that, because the trans community has invaded their world.
Yeah.
And so yeah, it's hard for them to find the balance of like how to talk about their issues and how they surpass them. But never once during the gay rights movement did I have to relinquish my rights to adhere to theirs. Never once. And that's what I always remind them of, is that I never felt like my rights were being violated by lifting up theirs in any regard, personally, at least.
Right. Yeah. There is some overlap. I've read a decent amount of like mostly personal stories about closeted gay men and like the overlap between narcissism and closeted homosexuals. And there is an overlap with autogynephilia in that like narcissistic closet homosexuals will abuse women, because the theory behind this is they will, and I've heard them like write about this and talk about this, they will abuse women because they're mad that like not even the best, most confident, most beautiful woman can like satisfy them sexually.
That makes sense,
right? And so then there is a female hate that happens, there is a woman hating that happens, because not even the most amazing women can make them happy. And so she becomes the target of that internalized like rage, which is really against, you know, not wanting, you know, themselves. So Yes, I hear what you're saying. Like you're speaking to the gay rights moving, having not presented this like ethical issue of like having to give up your rights in order for those people to get married or buy property,
right,
et cetera, et cetera. And I, where I see, I mean, I see lots of point of overlap, you know, with the trans stuff. Like it's a Venn, for me, it's a Venn diagram.
Yeah.
Venn diagram.
I think that's a really great way to put it. Yeah. There are overlaps for sure.
But what stood out to me about your, you know, when you submitted your story to me was the point that you mentioned here in this conversation, which is the hate and the distance and the triangulation that he created and you not understanding why. I mean, this is your brother who you helped raise, that you were like a mother figure to, not only a sister. Yeah.
Obsessed. I loved him when he was a baby. Oh my God. I was dying to change his diapers and clean up after his toys and bring him to games. And he was all boy for a long, most of his life, like such a boy. I would have, like I said, that's why I thought it was a joke. I would have never guessed.
And he's still a boy. I mean, he's a man now, but he was born male and he'll die male. There's nothing he can do to ever change that. And the, you being the target of the hate and the triangulation and the distance for them to him to reveal himself so explicitly, which is that I wanted to be you. And now I can be.
Yep. Even one time, and I saved these texts, he ranted at me and he goes, "Don't you understand that your pregnancy made me feel like I can never be pregnant, because if they ever dig up my body, no matter what stage of death I'm in, they'll always know I'm a man." And to be honest, I couldn't really even understand what the fuck that meant. I was like, what does that have to do with treating me and my daughter like garbage or for so long? Like, but like you said, that's narcissism 101. It's like, me, you're making me feel ashamed. You're making me feel inadequate, but that's really on you. I didn't do anything. I'm just alive.
Yeah. You're just alive. And you were like, it sounds like you only showed him kindness, love, compassion, like raising him like your own baby, like was so excited for his arrival, like all the things. It's like, that you were just like an estranged, just casual brother sister relationship or kind of distant or whatever. There was this closeness. You gave him tons of love, and then it doesn't matter. He ended up resenting you and then revealing that exactly, like, I hated you because I couldn't be you, but now I can be you. So now I'm letting you know that. But there's also like a sadistic element where he's telling you that he's choosing to go by your daughter's name. So like the very pregnancy he resented and hated, he's now taken on, like he's become
it's
the baby.
So bizarre, right? It is. It's really, and that took time for him to get there. Like I said, at first, the trickery was around, I'm going to become an activist. I'm going to go back to school and maybe even get my law degree. And like, I'm going to really fight for the rights of the downtrodden, and giving me this kind of Martin Luther King-esque diatribe. And I thought, you know what? And I'll be honest, because I hadn't talked to him in so long, I guess I believed it, because I was like, well, why would he call me to lie? You know, I never even crossed my mind. But that was because of my ignorance about autogynephilia, to be honest with you. I'd only been spoon-fed garbage from, you know, the media that I had left as a journalist, because I knew it was garbage. And that should have been an aha moment for me, but it was a double aha, I guess.
You sounds like you were processing many layers of the years of dysfunction and estrangement, triangulation, and like,
it was traumatic in a lot of ways, because it really is the whole reason I moved far away. When I was 18, I took a train by myself and moved far away because of all that negativity around me with him. Like, he started to be just, I mean, I started noticing when he was a teenager that he started to try to get me into trouble, like with my stepfather, and started to try to like get me in big trouble and just create lies. But I thought he was just a teenager. And I'll be honest, because I had that motherish bond, I kind of dismissed a lot of it, but it wasn't a great upbringing towards the end. Like towards the end, when I moved, when he was older, it wasn't great, but it got better as he went to college. And like, you know, we started to get kind of that age gap kind of started to close a little bit, in a sense where we could resonate with each other. But like I said, right around the age of 20, is when he started to get a little odd and cut me off. And then by the time he was 32, reached out in bizarre way, as I said.
And then treating you like a confidant. Like, it's a weird, it's just so layered and manipulative.
Caught me off guard. Yeah. In fact, I didn't even know it was his phone number for sure. But once I heard his voice, I was like, oh, like, why are you calling me? Was the first thing I said. It's, yeah, I was hurt at that point. Like, why have you been ignoring me and my daughter? And like, why do you hate me so much?
I can't imagine the level of confusion and, yeah, distortion that was like going on about. Yeah. So how do you talk to your daughter is 10 years old. How do you talk to your daughter about this issue? How is she like, how are you choosing to school her? Like, I'm really curious about that.
That's a great question. I mean, I am not a psychiatrist. I as I told you, I kind of have a bunch of degrees in history. But for me, I think because it's just me and her, I'm pretty honest with her. You know, I want her to know that her grandparents are suffering a lot and they're not quite themselves. So that was kind of step one, is like, what happened to Alex? But she's never had a relationship with him. So to be honest, she's like, oh, which, you know, what does he look like again? Like, she's only met him maybe three times. So I told her what was going on, and she immediately said to me, well, that's insane. You can't change that. You can't. She was immediately knew that that's not possible. And she thought it was really strange. I think for me personally, the thing I worried about most was how organically and easily I found his pornography. And I think I felt very scared that, God forbid, anybody could discover that I know. And so I did tell her that she's not allowed to use social media in any regard, but she's allowed to use like Pinterest, which is the only thing I let her. And I just kind of told her is that you have to be really careful of the type of content out there. And I told her that there's a lot of movement, and she goes, oh no, there's already people, she's in fifth grade, that are saying they're non-binary in my class. And I go, what do you think of that? And she's like, it doesn't even make sense. Like, it's stupid. And so she's quite clever already, and she already had some experiences. It made it a little bit easier for me to tell her the truth. Mm-hmm. And I did it in the most diplomatically non-disgusting way that I could. Yeah. It was really hard, but she thankfully is a lot like me. So she kind of is like, that's crazy. You know, and she just seems to innately know the truth that you cannot change these things, like your chromosomes.
Yeah.
But that's a really good question. I struggle with that. And I'd always wonder what type of advice somebody would give me. I'm sure people would tell me I'm wrong or how I'm doing things. I never know what's right.
Well, I think it's also just totally like uncharted territory. Like, I always say, like, you know, when I was growing up, my mom was worried about like drugs, alcohol, like the illegal, like illegal drugs.
Yeah. Alcohol. Yeah. Hanging out with the bad crowd. Like, don't hang out with them.
Hanging out with the bad crowd. Exactly. You know, not like OnlyFans and steroids and wanting to cut my breasts off. You know, like, no, it was like, how long can we stall her getting her ears pierced was like my parents' biggest challenge. Like, it was like Little League stuff. And so parents are in like uncharted territory. Like, I don't think anyone could have, some people, Janice Raymond anticipated this certainly, but I think the average person did not. And so, yeah, I imagine it's a real,
I think, people that worked in academia consistently saw it, like Jordan Peterson and stuff like that. Like, a lot of people saw it happening on campus. I think one thing I do warn her about is anime. Something I've noticed with my brother and his world is their addiction to anime porn as well. And a lot of children are into anime these days. And so I do tell her that we do not allow anime. And she's like, oh, that's okay. The people like that are weird, but I don't like how they make children dress. And I made sure to educate her a little bit about Japanese culture and Nanking, because I know a lot about history and how bizarre Japan was when they went on their crusade during the Pacific World War II. And so I remind her that a lot of that sprung out of the creepy violence that they spread upon China. My grandpa served in China for 7 years and came home with firsthand accounts when I was a kid. That's what got me into history. And I see a lot of parallels of anime and the destruction of Chinese women and what they did to children and women during that time. I don't know if there is a correlation. I have no idea. This is my own personal theory, but I do tell her that I think anime is toxic and disgusting, and it shouldn't be consumed by children. I mean, it'd be great if it was consumed by no one, but it's a weird cultural artifact, in my opinion.
Yeah.
It's a weird thing. I don't understand it.
And they can get away with so much more because there aren't, like, there's no limit to the kind of like barbarism and like sissification and pornification of the characters. Like, you can put holes everywhere. Like
that's a good point. No,
there are no bounds to the like perverse elements of that, because they're just characters, you know, like they're not actual people.
Right. And if you read about just the rape of Nanking and what they did those weeks, it's similar. It's quite similar. If you really, really, really can get into the details that are horrifying, making children fuck their mothers, gluing people together, different holes. Yeah, like really, really intense what went on. Yeah. My grandpa, you know, was kind of, unfortunately, became a bit racist from those experiences, but I never really blamed him because he was a product of his time and his experiences. I, of course, don't have any hatred of the Japanese, but I do think that it's part of the history, you know.
Right.
Yeah, and it's weird. So I don't allow anime. Drew a red line there.
Yeah.
And she was okay with that.
Have you listened to my interview with Amy Souza? Do you know Amy Souza?
No, I should. I would love to. Tell me about it.
Okay, so she has a master's in depth psychology, and she was a theater teacher in New York for many years. And she, her particular vantage point on all of this is like really like the antidote. Like, she's all into the expose as well, but she talks a lot about embodiment and how to arm women and girls with embodiment and resiliency tools. Like, how do we not become vulnerable? How do we, like, what is the antidote to being vulnerable to this kind of propaganda and our bodies not being ours and our flesh being, you know, mixed and matched? And so she talks a lot about like occupying the self, occupying the body. And she's awesome. And we have a class coming up. I haven't announced it yet, but I think by the time this episode is published, I'll be talking about it already. But yeah, I've invited her to teach a class on my platform in April, and we're encouraging women to bring their daughters. We've said like 12 and up, but now that I know you have a 10-year-old and she's super smart, I'm like, maybe we should do 10 and up. Use your best judgment, of course, with parental, you know, it's like
I'd be so open to that. Well, you know, it's funny because like I was a tomboy growing up. I was like really had big boobs as a young girl, and I hated how men were creepy to me, you know, and I had a lot of creepy experiences because back then you could just ride around on your bike and nobody knew that where the heck you were. And I remember cutting off all my hair, wearing boys' clothes, not in an attempt to be a boy. I didn't want to be a boy, but I really wanted to hide. And I think children go through, women, little girls go through that phase when they're transitioning as they realize they come into their bodies. And I think that's a really natural part of becoming a woman is noticing the gaze and being like a little alarmed or having some creepy. I mean, sixth grade, I had a man jerk off in the food court at the local mall when I was waiting to be picked up. And that was like those moments that started to wake me up. And, you know, I look back and I go, gosh, they probably would have transed me. Or said, you're gay, or you're this, or you're that. But really, I was just a little girl who was afraid of getting raped and wanted to hide. And so I think a class like that sounds really great of how to actually well up your body and be okay and learn how to position it in society without losing your mind or your sense of self is really interesting. Thank you. I'll take her because I do need help.
I'll send you everything when it's live. Yeah, it's April 13th.
Perfect. Okay. She'll be 11 around that time. So, you know, she'll almost be 11.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. I'm thinking we should do 10 and up. We're thinking 12 and up, but yeah, we trust mothers to make their best judgment, but yeah,
I think she'd love it.
And the expose is so important, like you sharing your story, what you've been through with your brother and what your parents are, what you're still going through, what they're still going through. I think it's really important. The expose is so important, and the antidote, like how do we strengthen, how do we promote embodiment? How do we promote resilience given that this is the climate that we're in? It's, you know, what do we, how do we protect ourselves?
I know. I honestly don't know. And I feel like I do scramble. Like you said, it's like real time. And it feels reactionary sometimes for me. And I try not to be that type of parent. And so it's hard. Yeah. So I definitely think having the more tools, the better. Because it was hard enough for me to figure out what the hell was going on.
Right. Yeah. You just like told us the story in a really succinct way. And then I realized this, but it's like a lot of it was like retrospectively, you can look back and say, oh, this is what was going on. We can make assumptions. What was going on unconsciously, you know, like, but yeah, it's.
I'm a pretty horrible liar. I will openly admit at the time I was like, I'll help you do a Zoom to come out, you know? And I've always been a bit left, right of center. I've been more of a centrist throughout my whole life. But I just heard the pain. And so I thought, well, I can help that.
Right.
But once I got a little bit more information, it totally did a beyond a 180. I felt like I spun in a million directions.
Wow.
A lot.
Wow.
Yeah. And currently too, right now, still, my mother is getting court summons for massive amounts of debt he's gotten himself into. Signed up for some debt consolidation that is stealing his money. And so, you know, my mother's constantly being hounded of like how to help him get out of this. And she gets anxiety every time she gets mail, like what's going to be in the mail now. It's really horrifying for her. One thing that is interesting is that in order to give him money, my mother really begged him to stop doing the porn and get a real job. And so he did assure her that he did that. But I was a little bit not believing it because of what I'd read and understood about autogonophilia. I don't have an OnlyFans account, but when you go to the landing page of somebody, you can see how often they're online. And he is on there upwards of 13 times a day, hours at a time. And so he, even though he's not making money off of it now, he is still addicted to it. And so I think that's the thing I would love people to understand is that this is like a lot deeper. It's a severe mental health issue. It's like a brain anomaly from what I really understand. Mm-hmm. And that I have empathy that they cannot help it. But just because they're in this make-believe world doesn't mean you have to live in it too. And it's not hateful or bigoted to know what the truth is. And I think the hardest part is that people will think you're a bigot. And if they could really understand, I would love to be able to help this person, but they don't want it. They don't want help.
And that you have to exercise your own protection and self-preservation. Like
my world got so small because I can't trust people and I don't want to talk to people because I'm not quite sure what bullshit's going to come out of their mouth. And I constantly always say, well, you let me know when you actually have a sibling who acts like this and you come back to me when you have a sibling or a child. Because I think until you lose your child or your sibling, you really can't understand how horrible it is to have them disappear. Yeah. And become this like really vile, disturbing monster that you don't want around your children, that you're afraid to have around your children. And that's sad because now my daughter has no uncle. And I don't mean that to sound silly, but yeah, that's, I guess the last bit I'd say is that, you know, it's just, I'm not a bigot. I loved my brother very much, but I can't love him the way he is right now. I feel for him though.
Yeah. You've had to set some boundaries, which is a sign of health.
That's good to know.
Yeah.
I'm not always sure if I'm doing the right thing or not, but it's really nice to talk with you because you're making me feel a little better.
It's hard. The programming around like, setting boundaries and saying no, and even our disgust. And this is what Amy's going to be getting into the class actually is like, there is a function to our disgust. There is a function to the visceral no. Get that person away from me. Get that behavior away from me. That behavior is unacceptable to me. Like that is such an important part of our human instincts. And then also our instincts as like women. And so to deny that, to say, I'm feeling that that's dangerous, but I'm going to think my way into it being safe, which is what the trans propaganda does. It says you need to deal with your inner transphobia. Like the problem is with you. Like, you know, it might seem weird to you at first, but you just need to give it a chance or like try it on. Or like you say, you only like penis, but have you ever, well, you know, it's like it's like rape. It's a rape culture. It's so gross.
It is.
So
Alex was very mad that I told people what he was up to. And he said, you outed me. And he goes, and I think you outed me because you're into it. You're into this type of stuff. Yeah, he actually said that to me. And I told him, I go, no, actually, you are an idiot and you didn't change your phone number. And you, I work in tech and you say use the same phone number for all your creepy accounts. So they popped up into my feed. Don't you dare talk to me like that. That was like probably the most disgusting thing he said to me. There was a lot of disgusting things, but that one actually caught me quite off guard. I was like, oh, wow, you're now accusing me of having like a kink. Like I was looking for it and I just accidentally found you, but that's not true. That's not true. Yeah. So you're right.
Wow.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. That's disgust. Like the next level of like, not only are you, am I going to gaslight you and try to make you call me a lesbian and a woman, but now I'm telling you, like you have this darkness in you too.
Just the craziest thing ever. Yeah, I mean, it was hard to have that one. I'll be honest. I've been be like, you want to say that to my face? Like, I've never had a sibling fight, but I was ready to have one at that moment because it really disgusted me what he said. To your point about disgust, it was a visceral moment. I was like, yeah, I'm not into anything you're up to, dude. I think you're mentally ill. And then I told him he has autogonophilia and he called me a Joe Rogan bro. But Joe Rogan did help me discover Dr. So. Well, he was the only person I would interview her. That's how I discovered Rogan was through So. Yeah.
You're
so,
like,
I guess he was right.
I am a female Joe Rogan fan, not a Joe Rogan bro. Excuse me. Excuse you.
I know, he's even misgendering me. I should have called him out on that now yeah, that I think back.
It's the continuous, like, desperation misogyny. To involve you in his own darkness. Like, that's not you. And what you, and I feel so, I'm like, yeah, you, like, good on you for, like, freaking standing up to him and being like, no, like, I'm sorry. Like, yeah. No.
This is how I found you. I even had saved this screenshot. I'm like, do you understand that you're really not that bright? Like, but we aren't, you know, we are half siblings. He was never the academic that I was. So it's like, maybe you're just not that bright and you don't understand how tech works. But yeah, when you create multiple accounts, people can find them more easily with your same phone number. So.
My goodness. Well, I appreciate you being able to find some comedy amidst this real tragedy of humankind. That
it like, is. You do have to find the laugh sometimes, you know, because that one was a good. That was a good one. I was like, that's interesting flex.
Nice try. Yeah, nice try. But you didn't get me. Yep.
No, right. I'm not that easily ruffled on that one. But right. It was interesting that he said it. And I thought, wow, that was creepy. That was really creepy.
It's just endlessly fascinating on like a psychological level of just how layered it is. And
it is. And how many paraphilias there are. I mean, once I really just looked at paraphilic research, and I just want to say, like, these researchers, Blanchard, Bailey, all of them, they've even like risked their lives to do this type of research. And for people to negate that is kind of like, wow, because nobody's doing much of it anymore. And I really respect those people for risking their lives. And J.K. Rowling. I mean, every day she tweets, I feel like a bullet could come through her window. I worry about the violence that continuously has happened. Because I do think there is a lot of violence in this community.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We've seen it. Yeah, I've seen it firsthand at the events, for sure, that I've produced, that I've attended.
Wow.
Yeah, 100%.
I'm sorry. 100%. I'm glad that you're safe now or okay and nothing's happened to you. You know yes. What I mean? It's scary for us.
Yeah. Yeah. It is. It is. Well, I'm really appreciate your courage and your clarity and your the boundaries that you've set and the way that it sounds like you're arming your daughter and, you know, like in the way and willing to change course and like just figuring it out. Like, as again, there's like not quite a rule book for how to deal with this, especially when it's in your family and it's so close to home, literally.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for this chance to speak to all the beautiful people that listen to you and to have your perspective and your empathy. And I really appreciate it. You have no idea. And I hope we meet again.
I would so thank love you. That. I would so love that. Thank you so much, Elle.
If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with a friend or family member who needs to hear this content. And if you do share it on social media, don't forget to follow and tag me at Whose Body Is It? So until next time.